I would say in our 45 years of marriage, probably one of the best things I never expected. You don't even know what I'm going to say.
I know what I would say.
I was going to say how God has used our marriage to impact other marriages. Didn't
Yeah.
even think of that when we got married, but now it's like, wow, what God has done in us, he wants to do through us to impact others. And one of the things we've done over 45 years, almost every year, we have led a small group or been in a small group talking about the topic of marriage.
I was going to say it's probably helped our marriage more than anything else that we've done.
Yeah.
And so if you're looking for some resources, some biblical, sound, good resources, we have them for you at Family Life.
We got the New Art of Marriage. We've got Vertical Marriage. We've got Love Like You Mean It. All these are great small group materials that we've designed sort of to be user-friendly, just plug and play. We've got workbooks. You can impact your neighborhood, impact your church, impact your city.
And make your marriage better.
Yeah, make your marriage better and others as well. So here's the deal. You're getting 25% off right now in the month of August, the whole month. You don't need a code. All you need to do is go to familylifetoday.com. Who doesn't want a good deal? So we started a conversation with the Gary Chapman yesterday.
Yeah.
On your new life with your adult children, man.
Couldn't you talk to him forever?
I mean, about anything.
Yes.
He really knows his stuff. And that was just one day. We got another one. So let's get back to that.
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Ann Wilson.
And I'm Dave Wilson, and you can find us at familylifetoday.com. This is Family Life Today. Talk about your kids. How old are they? Grandkids?
Oh, now listen, I can't believe.
You can't say their age,
daughter,
probably.
Oh, can't say their age?
Well, maybe you can.
Of course, we want you to.
My daughter is 60. I can't believe that.
Wow.
And my son is 4 years younger than that.
Wow.
So they're grown.
Yeah.
But we do have grandchildren who are my daughter's children. My son and his wife don't have children. So we've got a small family, and we have good connections. And, you know, I wrote a book years ago called Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Had Children.
Yeah.
I wish I'd known that no two children are alike.
Yeah.
Isn't that true?
Oh, because our daughter at 8 years old, she said, I'm going to be a doctor when I grow up. And she never wavered. In high school, she took 3 years of Latin and 4 years of chemistry. My son, all over the chart. He said about her, her name's Shelly. He said, Shelly's going to miss out on a lot of life. She's just too focused.
And you have to figure out how to parent both.
Absolutely.
Did you have anybody come back after college?
In our house, no, because our daughter went on all.
She went right to med school.
She left when she's 8 years old.
Yeah.
She knew.
Yeah. And my son took 6 years in undergrad because he majored in philosophy, also majored in world religions, and majored in English. And then he did a master's in expressive therapy, using dance and art and music as therapy.
Okay, so as a mom and dad, are you guys thinking, what's happening?
Well, by this time, we recognize this is just who he is, you know.
So you're not thinking he's broken, he's messed up, I need to change him or fix him.
No. And he worked in that field for maybe 3 months, and he came home and he said, Dad, you know, in a way, I feel like I'm helping people with this therapy, but I'm beginning to realize if you don't get people to Jesus, you hadn't really helped them. So maybe I should go to seminary, which blew our minds because we had never, ever, ever thought.
Yeah.
And he had never talked about, you know, going into ministry of any kind.
Yeah. Did he go to seminary?
He did, yeah. And he went to Golden Gate Seminary in San Francisco and lived in the old Haight-Ashbury district in a house church the whole 3 years he was there and worked with kids on the street.
He probably loved that.
Oh, he did. He loved it. You know, I went out there and spent a week with him once, and I said, I'm just going to walk with you this week, wherever you go, classes or wherever, and just be with you. He said, well, Dad, we can do that, but you got to dress down. So I dressed down.
You did?
And he came in, and he said, well, Dad, that's pretty dressed down, but why don't you put on this toboggan, you know? So I did. I walked the streets where he lived. I walked 5 blocks. I was offered drugs 4 times.
Really?
It meant it's just the way it was.
Yeah.
And if the kids came to, I say kids, sometimes they were in their 20s and 30s, just not living on the streets. If they came to Christ, they had a discipleship center in the Redwood Forest where they could stay for a year or 2 years, get off drugs, get cleaned up, and then plug back into society. That was his ministry there. When he was in college, he worked with street people. In fact, when he got ready to leave college the last time, he contacted about 20 street people, and he said, I'm going to be moving, and I got some stuff here I'm going to give away. And you guys come by, you can have whatever you want, you know.
Whoa.
I would never even think about anything like that. You know, again, recognizing our children are unique. And particularly if they're following God, let them follow God, you know, and do what they feel like God wants them to do.
So now every parent is thinking, what did you guys do to get an evangelist and a doctor in your family? My son's still in the basement, you know, living with us.
Well, you know, when they were children, of course, we had a devotional time every night with our children from the very beginning. And one of us would go to the bedside with them every night and pray with them in bed every night. And then every morning, I would read a scripture verse around the table for breakfast. Now, my wife was not at the table. My wife fixed her hot breakfast. She made a commitment to God. When they first started to school, as long as they're in school, I'm going to cook a hot breakfast. And she's not a morning person.
I'm not either.
And so she didn't come to the table. She just fixed the breakfast and went back and laid down. But yeah, they had that experience all growing up. So they were in the church and they were involved in the youth ministry and all of that. So they had the background. But they're still children that grow up in that kind of setting.
Oh, yeah.
And when they get to be adults, they make a different choice. And that's where I think parents are often asking themselves, or they hear me say what I'm saying, and they say, well, we never did that for our kids. I wish we'd have done that for our kids, you know. Would it have made a difference? You know, well, we can't undo the past.
Yeah.
And I sometimes say, when parents say to me, what did we do wrong? I say, well, don't assume that the decisions your parent, your adult children are making are because you did wrong. I said, remember, God's first two children went wrong, and they had a perfect father.
Right. Yeah.
So don't take all the blame. Now, if you recognize that there's some ways you failed your children, and now they're adults, fine, you go apologize to them. Now, I've been thinking about us and when we were young, and I realized there's some ways that I failed you, and I just want to apologize to you. I know I can't undo it, but I want to apologize for whatever it was, you know.
And that means a lot to the kids. My dad did that to me when he was 90 years old.
Yeah.
And I think I was 60. And I sat there and he said, Ann, I'm really sorry that I just wasn't there for you.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of things that now I regret. And I just cried.
Yeah.
And it meant so much. I didn't need it per se. I knew who I was in Christ and God had done so much, but it still meant so much that he would humble himself to say that. And I gave him total grace, like, oh, Dad, you are amazing, you know?
Yeah.
And he was a guy, you know, my father-in-law, and I didn't really have a dad growing up, so he became my dad. Yeah. And he was my high school coach, so I knew him before, but he was not an apologizing type guy.
Oh, yeah. No, he thought it was weak.
A strong leader. Yeah. You're weak if you do that. So he really, his heart got tender later.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
But I don't remember the details. When we wrote a book called No Perfect Parents, we did a Zoom interview with you.
That's right.
And you told some story about apologizing to your son.
Derek.
Am I right?
It was said you guys got in your biggest fight.
That's when I lost my temper with him and yelled and screamed at him.
Yeah.
It's when I first realized, because he was yelling and screaming at me. And I asked myself, where did he learn that? Mm. And I realized I yelled and screamed at him. Mm. So I remember the one night when we got into it. I don't remember what the topic was, but I was yelling and screaming at him. He was yelling and screaming at me. And in the middle of that argument, he walked out of his room. We were in his room. He walked out of his room, across the living room, out the front door, and slammed the door. And when the door slammed, I started crying. Mm. And I said, oh, God, how could I yell at the son I love? And I sat down on the couch just weeping and talking to God and apologizing to God. Carolyn came in, my wife, and tried to console me. And she said, Gary, that was not your fault. I heard the whole thing. He has got to learn how to respect you and da, 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 da. And so she finally walked out of the room. And I just sat there with God for a while. And finally, he walked back in. He was 13 or 14. and walked back in. I said, Derek, I said, son, could you come in here a minute? So he did, and he sat down, and I apologized to him. And I don't remember all that I said, but I know I said, a father should never talk to a son the way I talk to you. And I know I said some hateful things, and that's not the way I feel about you. I love you very much. But I lost my temper, and I yelled at you. And I said, I'm asking you to forgive me for that. And he said, when I was walking up the street, I asked God to forgive me because I should not have been yelling at you. And he said, I'm going to ask you to forgive me. So we hugged each other and we cried. And after we got through crying, I said, Derek, why don't we try something? Why don't we try and learn how to talk our way through anger rather than yelling our way? So the next time you feel angry at me, what if you just say, Dad, I'm angry. Can we talk? And I'll sit down and listen to you. And the next time I feel angry with you, I'll say, Derek, I'm angry. Can we talk? And I'll sit down and you listen to me and let's learn to talk our way through it. And that was the turning point in both of us handling anger. That's why I sometimes say it was one of the saddest nights of my life and one of the happiest nights of my life.
Yeah.
When I realized he knew how to apologize to God, and he knew how to apologize to me, because I knew someday he'd be married and he would need to apologize to his wife.
But Gary, some people are listening to that and they think, we're yelling all the time. Like, that's just part of our home that we're yelling, even with adult kids. Like, it's just volatile. It's big. It's loud. And then there may or may not be resolution. How can we change that if that's just been a pattern in our family?
I think, first of all, you have to recognize it as a problem rather than just accepting it. Now, I'm not talking about just loud talking. I mean, loud talking's okay. But if, I mean, you're yelling out of anger. Well, that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
And I think to recognize it, this is not healthy. It's not going to help us in any way.
Right.
And so I think somebody has to take the initiative. It can be an adult child who's further along with God than their parents are.
Yeah.
Who comes back and says, you know, I just want to apologize for all the times I've yelled at you. Mm-hmm. And the parent can say the same thing to the adult child. And then consequently say, I know I need to learn how to do this in a better way. So what can we do? You know, I wrote a book on anger. And in the back of it, I suggest that every family put on a 3x5 card on the refrigerator that has these words. I'm feeling angry right now, but don't worry, I'm not going to attack you. But I do need your help. Is this a good time to talk? Mm-hmm. And so the whole family, when you're angry at anyone in the family, you go get that card and you stand in front of them and you read it to them. I'm feeling angry right now. Imagine your teenage son. I'm feeling angry right now, Dad, but I'm not going to attack you. It's just the way of teaching the whole family how to handle anger in a positive way. And I've had people say, Doc Chapman, I was raised on that card. I didn't know where my parents got it, but I was raised on that card.
Oh, really?
That's so helpful for a marriage, too, for your adult kids.
Absolutely.
That's really good.
Yeah, but I mean, even what you did with your son and what Derek did is, you know, you are humble.
Yeah.
And I think as parents, sometimes we're not humble. We're prideful. We think we're right. They should have.
Yeah.
We didn't do anything wrong. And to own up to where you were. I remember, I've shared this here before, but my middle son and youngest son, I had three sons. They were probably, what, in their mid-20s, early 20s, somewhere. We were playing golf, and we had lunch after, and they looked at each other, and I thought, uh-oh, something's coming. They've talked. And they basically said, Dad, we wanted to say something to you. We felt like, growing up, you were more intimate with the congregation than you were with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, what do you mean? And they said, well, you know, we'd be sitting there, and you'd be preaching on Sunday, and thousands of people sitting around us, and you'll tell some vulnerable, transparent, honest story about a struggle or something. And we look at each other like, has he ever told you that? No. But you're telling thousands of people instead of us.
Yeah.
And I remember that moment when they said that, my first thought was, they're right.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing in me going, I'm going to defend myself. What do you mean?
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh, I've done that.
Yeah.
And so it was one of those moments, like sort of with you, I was like, I'm sorry, you're right.
Yeah.
I did that. I didn't try to even explain why. I just said, I am sorry. And I remember saying, I'm not dead. You're not dead. Maybe we can change this whole thing. You know, it's like, hopefully I'll do better going forward. But I think a lot of kids, that bonds you to them when their mother or father owns their sin and their mistakes and says, I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
and with adult children, where you realize you have failed, that can be the starting point of a different kind of relationship when you apologize to them for that. Because by nature, in our minds, we think they're the main problem.
Yep.
The kid's the main problem, you know. But Jesus said you start with the plank in your own eye.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that they're okay, but you start with your own. But if you take the initiative to apologize for your failures, they're going to walk away thinking, man, never heard that before, you know.
That humble
and
heart.
Chances are they will forgive you. But at least they're going to walk away and with that memory in their mind of, Dad, apologize. Mom, apologize. You know, so it can often be the doorway to a better relationship in the future.
Yeah. Hey, let me just interrupt quickly and say this. If you're enjoying this content, you have a Family Life partner to thank for it. Family Life Partners are the heartbeat of this ministry. Seriously, they really are. And when you join this monthly giving community, you're not just donating, you're investing in a healthier, hope-filled, gospel-centered future for families everywhere.
Yes, and here's what's going to happen. If you become a Family Life Partner, you'll receive behind-the-scenes updates, access to exclusive events, and also a place in our private partner community.
And we'd be honored to have you on the journey with us. We really would. So here's the question. Will you join us today?
I hope you will. Just go to familylifetoday.com and you can click the donate button right there and become a part of the monthly partner program.
Okay, back to the conversation.
This kind of goes off topic a little bit, but
no, you can't go off topic.
No, I'm just thinking of the adult kids, and I know several that are living at home, and they could be in their 30s or 40s, but really struggling with mental health issues or even suicidal ideation. And so now you've got the parents not knowing what to do. And it used to be we're saying tough love, you can't be in this house unless you have a job and et cetera. Now it feels like we're swinging back the other way a little bit. Any help? I just know a lot of parents that they're seeking Jesus, they're fasting, they're praying for these kids that are struggling.
Yeah.
And I think the suicidal ideation, the anxiety, the depression, the numbers are up so much.
Yeah.
We as parents feel so helpless and not knowing what to do and how to help.
Yeah, I do deal with that whole issue in this book.
Yeah.
And I think what we want to do is, again, keep conversation going in the home rather than just going on with no conversation, you know, just sustaining life, but to say, what can we do that will get you on a better track? And if it's depression or suicidal thoughts or all of that, then let's find a counselor, a Christian counselor that would be helpful for you. I know you don't have the money to pay for it, but we're willing to pay for it because I know you want to get through this and we want to help you get through this. So what we want to do is to try to address whatever the problem is. If they're having trouble finding a job, then let's talk about, you know, when you think of the wildest thing, what would you think about doing, you know, and kind of get their ideas. And then maybe we can help them get enrolled in a local technical school that will teach some skills along the lines of what they have interest in. But rather than just day after day, week after week, year after year, just sitting there with the problem, what we want to do is try to help them find some steps. There's no quick fix to it, but let's get them on a track that's going to help them end up at a different place 6 months or a year from now.
It's such a hard dilemma because the child is feeling like a failure.
Yeah.
They think that they are a failure from their parents' view. The parents feel like failures. What did we do to create this? So it's this vibe that they're just like struggling. And I've seen that happen more and more. But you're saying open the door to conversation. And it has to be one of love and not disappointment. Like, you're such a loser. What are you still doing in our house?
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And kids can feel that. We may not say it, but they can feel.
Yeah.
And it's hard for parents. Like, do you fake it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You do fake it. You're saying you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think this is also where the five love language concept helps an adult child.
Do you know anything about that? Five love languages?
We love our children. I mean, we love them when they're little. We love them when they're big. But the question is, do they feel loved?
Mm.
And an adult child that you're struggling with, if they don't feel loved by you, then they're not open to hear what you have to say. Mm. And that's where I understand that concept. In fact, I've had it work the other way around, where adult children discover the five love languages and then look back and realize they never felt love growing up, but they look back and realize, oh, they did love me. They were just speaking the wrong language.
Oh, that's beautiful.
The first time I read your book, I thought that. Because I would say to my siblings, I feel like mom and dad didn't love us. And my brother would say, are you kidding? They did everything for us. Mom got up and made us meals. They took us to all these things. And I would say, but they never told us. They never told us, and they never hugged us.
Yeah.
And I realized when I read it, like, oh, I felt like the whiner. But their love language was meeting my brother's love language.
Yeah.
And for me, it was like, tell me that you love me. But that had all the, I think so many people come to that revelation, like, when they read your book. Yeah.
I was speaking in Angola prison. All the men in there were in there for life.
Wow.
And I said, I want to try to explain to you why you either felt love growing up or you did not feel loved growing up. And I shared the love languages in that context.
Yeah.
When the Q&A time came, a young man stood up and said, I judge him to be about 30. I want to thank you for coming, because for the first time in my life, I finally understand that my mother loves me.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you go this love languages. And I knew my love language is physical touch, but my mother never hugged me.
Mm.
The only hug I ever remember getting from my mother was the day I left for prison.
Oh.
But you gave those other languages, and I realized my mother spoke acts of service. She was a single mom. Mm. She had two jobs. She kept food on the table. She washed my clothes, and he rattled off all this stuff. And by this time, he was just crying.
Wow.
And he said, Mama loves me. Mama loves me. Mama loves me. And I started crying.
Yeah. Wow.
But he realized, when he understood that there are different languages, he now is giving her emotional credit for it.
Yeah.
If he saw her, if she came for a visit and he shared that with her, it could have been the rebirth of their relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
You know? Probably was.
And even that kind of takes us into becoming in-laws. As a child is getting married, is there anything we can do to welcome that son or daughter-in-law into our family that would be helpful?
Obviously, it depends on where they live, for example.
Yeah.
If they're going to be living half a world away, or across the country.
In Prague, like your daughter-in-law and son?
It's a different kind of relationship.
Yeah.
It's going to have to be online kind of things, conversations with them and that sort of thing. If they're living down the street, you can have dinner with them once a week or once a month, or go shopping with them, or all those kind of things. So a lot depends on geographically where we are with our adult children and our in-laws. But I think what we do want to do is to try to build a positive relationship. And also not insert ourselves too much
this
in terms of trying to tell them what they should be doing or what they should not be doing.
Yeah.
So I think that's the key balance between those two.
If we have an issue going on with a, let's say you have a daughter and the son-in-law and you want to say something to them, this is kind of a tricky question. Would you go just to your daughter or would you go to both of them?
I think I would talk to her first.
Okay.
Because you have a lifelong relationship with her.
Yeah.
You have a shorter relationship with her husband.
Yeah.
So I think asking her advice on, here's the situation. How do you think, what would be the best way to handle this?
So you're asking her, your daughter.
Yeah. You're asking her advice on how would be the best way to handle this.
That's wise.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really good.
This is one of the biggest issues that we as parents are dealing with.
Yeah.
Adult children, it's hard.
We don't know.
It's wonderful.
What to do.
Yeah. It's incredible, but it's the navigating that. Nobody's telling us how to do it. That's why this is, you know, so helpful to help us navigate that. I don't know if we've done it well.
No, there's some things that I feel like I don't know what I'm doing, and it's new. And so to have a book, Your New Life with Adult Children, you co-wrote this with Ross Campbell.
Yeah.
He's great too. And so I think this book can really help. You get some handles on how to be doing this and what to do, but also what not to do or what not to say.
Yeah. So pick up this book. It's in our show notes, familylifetoday.com. You want to buy one. I don't think you give this to your kids. This is just the parents read this.
Read the subtitle.
Oh, yeah. The subtitle is awesome. A practical guide to what helps, what hurts, and what heals.
Thanks, Gary.
Thank you.
Always great to be with you.
Thank you. Always enjoy being with you all.
Family Life Today is a donor-supported production of Family Life, a Crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.